Welcome to installment 90 of Sefer HaMitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains four commandments regarding prohibited sexual relations. Prohibition 348 and 349, both regarding sexual relations with an animal, and 350 and 351, the prohibition against homosexual relations, and an additional prohibition against a man having homosexual relations with his father. Prohibition 348 is the prohibition on a man against having sexual relations with an animal, whether a male or a female animal. The same verse in the 18th chapter of the book of Leviticus also directs us for prohibition number 349, and this is a prohibition on a woman against having sexual relations with an animal, as the verse states that a woman should not give herself to an animal and allow it to mate with her. And the verse then concludes, Tevel hu, that this is a perversion. Rashi explains the word tevel hu, that tevel is from the word belila, or a mixture, referring to a mixture of two things which normally should not be mixed together, meaning the seed of a human and the seed of an animal. One explanation of this prohibition against the mixing of seed is that since it cannot result in reproduction, since they were not meant to reproduce, therefore it is forbidden by the Torah. Interestingly enough, we have in today's day a sort of scientific prohibition of this kind. As we will discuss more thoroughly in tomorrow's shiur, the idea of artificial insemination, mixing of seed outside of direct physical contact, and a test tube or some similar medium. It is common knowledge that many quote-unquote scientists and medical practitioners today, in a desire to find new things in experimentation, have actually mixed together reproductive fluids from an animal and a human being and tried to make them reproduce and have actually obtained cell division to a certain extent. Assuming, as we will discuss tomorrow, that artificial insemination is prohibited by the Torah, the mixture of such seed would violate this prohibition against the mixing of the seed of a human being with that of an animal. The Rambam explains why these two commandments are counted separately instead of just one prohibition against sexual relations with an animal, and this would include both a male and a female. The Rambam says if we just had the verse saying that a man may not have relations with an animal, we would not know that a woman is prohibited. And he brings a proof from the beginning of the tractate Krisus, where 36 different violations for which the punishment is kares, or excision of the soul, are listed. And among these 36, although many of them there are general sort of categories, including many particular mitzvahs, these two, that of a man having relations with an animal and that of a woman having such relations, are counted as two separate commandments. We therefore see that they should be counted as separate commandments among the total of 613. The punishment for these two prohibitions, as well as the following two prohibitions from today's shir, is that if the person did the act intentionally, after having been warned by witnesses, he or she is punished by skila, death by stoning. Should the act be intentional, but there were no witnesses, or the person was not able to be stoned, then the punishment is then kares, or excision, a cutting off of the soul. Should it have been done b'shegeg, unintentionally, then the person is required to bring a korban chatos kvua, a sin offering, brought when the intentional act would warrant kares. An unintentional act in such a case warrants a korban chatos, the person must bring a sin offering. The Sifra points out, by the way, that after such a case, the animal is also put to death. And the reason is that since the person was put to death as a result of this animal, through this animal's cooperation, that although the animal had no choice in the matter, nevertheless, this will be a sign of the shameful act which a person did and will bring shame to that person even after his death. Even more so, say our sages, that someone who is alive and someone that has free choice should not cause shame to one's neighbor, that even this animal had no free choice in the matter, is put to death as a result of the shame caused to the person that had the relation with it, so much more so a human being who causes shame to another person in any manner that has committed a despicable act. Prohibition number 350 is the prohibition against homosexual relations. For this prohibition, there are two verses, and the Rambam says that they come to teach us one and the same thing, and are repeated as a matter of chizuk, to point out the severity of this prohibition. In the book of Leviticus, it is stated, "Ve'ezachol le'sishkav mishkeve isha te'evahi," that one should not lay with a man as one lays with a woman, since it is an abomination. And similarly, in the book of Deuteronomy, it is stated, "Lo yiyeh kodesh mi bnei Yisrael," there should not be a male prostitute among the Jewish people. The Talmud discusses what is the precise meaning of this second verse. And in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Shmuel says that the second verse comes to make a prohibition on the one who is the recipient in such a relationship, that the perpetrator is violating lo yisishkav, and the one who is the recipient is violating the prohibition lo yiyakodesh. Therefore, there are two separate prohibitions, and one that would violate both of these acts would have to bring two sacrifices. Rav Akiva, on the other hand, says that the prohibition, lo sishkav, implies both. Lo sishkav, that you shall not lie with him, and lo sishachev, which would be spelled the same way, would mean one must not allow oneself to be lain with. And therefore, there is only one prohibition. And both of these verses come to stress the severity of this prohibition. And therefore, a person that would violate both be the loisishkav, the active one, and loisishachev, the inactive one, the recipient, would only have to bring one sacrifice, since it is all part of one mitzvah. And the conclusion of the Talmud there is like Rabbi Akiva. And as Rambam quotes, the saying of our sages that both of these ideas of lo sishkav and lo sishachev, about the perpetrator and the recipient, chodehi, they are all one commandment, and rather repeated only for pointing out the severity of the prohibition. There are many other mitzvahs which are similar, says the Rambam, as he has pointed out in the ninth principle of how he enumerates the commandments, such as we have lo yisinaf, one shall not commit adultery. And so too, we have the verse, vel eishes amischa lo yisitin shchavtecha, one shall not lie with one's neighbor's wife, as we will discuss in tomorrow's portion. And both of these verses are all included under the one prohibition of adultery, and do not count as separate prohibitions, although they are phrased differently and indicated in separate verses. The final commandment of today's portion is Prohibition 351, which is the prohibition against having homosexual relations with one's father. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs quotes the Tractate Sanhedrin, which states that this verse comes to prohibit relations literally with one's father. That one interpretation might be that one is prohibited from having relations with one's father's wife. And this would be like as if one is committing a prohibited act with one's father, since it is one's father's wife. However, the Talmud in Sanhedrin says, Avicha Mamish, literally your father. The Talmud therefore asks, isn't such an act already prohibited? In the previous prohibition, we prohibited all homosexual relations. Why should there be a special prohibition, a special verse for this, for one's father? And the Talmud answers that this is in order to make the person transgressing two prohibitions. And therefore, should he do two such acts unintentionally, he would have to bring two sacrifices rather than one. The Rambam tells us in Sefer HaMitzvahs that this corresponds to the opinion of Rav Yehuda. The Rav Yehuda says that a non-Jew who has homosexual relations with his father is transgressing two prohibitions. One, homosexual relations, and another one, homosexual relations with one's father. That a non-Jew is also precluded from homosexual relations, as well as our previous commandment against relations with an animal. These are included in the Noahide Code under the category of prohibited sexual relations. However, the Talmud continues there and says that it makes sense to say that Rabbi Yehuda's words apply to a Jew, and it comes to teach us that Chayev Shtayim, that a Jew must bring two sacrifices if he did two such acts unintentionally. Why then did he express it in the case of a non-Jew? Why did he say that that his law applies in the case of a non-Jew? And the Gemara says it wanted to use a language which is less insulting for the Jews. In order to accuse or use a case where a Jew did such a thing, Rabbi Yehuda didn't want to use such an expression. Therefore, he said a non-Jew that did something would be transgressing two prohibitions, but the same law would apply to a Jew as well. From this, we see that they count as two separate commandments, one prohibition not to have homosexual relations, and another homosexual relations with one's father. The Ramban explains that all relationships, sexual unions, which by nature preclude the possibility of reproduction are prohibited by the Torah, such as that with an animal or relations with someone of the same sex. And although the Torah allows, and in a case where a couple is married and have already gone past childbearing age, the Torah still requires, actually, them to continue their sexual relationship. Nevertheless, this is because, essentially, they are capable, it is a union which is capable of reproduction. And even though they should not do so in a physical sense, our sages say, regarding the relationship between Avram and Sarah, before they had their son Yitzchak, that all of those years they were creating neshamas, that through their sexual relations they created neshamas, and these souls later on became converts to Judaism as a result of their union together, that it was still a productive union, it's at least in the spiritual sense, until it actually came into physical fruition. However, by nature non-productive, it has been generally accepted throughout civilized societies throughout the ages, with rare exceptions, that these sort of relations are prohibited and certainly non-productive. In fact, in the civil codes, in general, in civil law, such relationships, homosexual relationships, are prohibited. However, an attitude has been spreading recently that anything involving mutual consent, as long as people do not hurt one another, then it becomes all right. Suddenly it is allowed. We have no right, says this point of view, that we have no right to push our moral concerns upon someone else, that if they feel that they are not being heard upon it and they are enjoying themselves, then how can we force them to do anything? They have their free choice as long as they're happy. However, this should not and cannot be our attitude from the Torah point of view, and even from simple human compassion. If you would see a child who was born with the nature, God forbid, of banging his head against the wall or tearing his hair out, would we say that this child has the right to do what he wants? We wouldn't say as long as it makes him happy. We would say the child is born with something wrong with him, and we would have an obligation to help him stop, since he is damaging himself physically and spiritually and emotionally. And so too in the case of homosexual relations. We cannot merely sit back and say, well, we cannot put our moral values on them. That if we see people being harmed physically, as this has been unfortunately revealed recently, physical diseases resulting from homosexual contact, and certainly emotionally, and definitely spiritually, harm is being done to a person, then we have an obligation to speak in a peaceful way, and a gentle way, and encourage people to get help in order to change their ways and to get away from this sort of conduct. We do recognize that there could be a person that is born with such a predilection to such sort of behavior, and a natural leaning of this sort is difficult to conquer. However, this does not preclude the necessity of speaking with such people in order to encourage them to do what is right, to control their desires of their heart, and change themselves into a proper mode of behavior. And as we mentioned, this must not be done out of accusation and out of violence, but rather out of compassion, and out of a true feeling of compassion and care for the person involved. And this applies not only to individuals, but also, and perhaps even more so, referring to official decrees and declarations regarding the so-called rights regarding this. That this is not a question of rights. This is not a question of restricting someone's free choice. As the example is commonly brought, if a person attempts to jump off a bridge, we see that society sends fire trucks and policemen to prevent the person from harming themselves. Aye, we are violating their free choice, but they are damaging themselves. We cannot allow such sort of behavior in a civilized society. And certainly, by virtue of the laws of the Torah and the seven mitzvahs of the Bnei Noach, such actions are considered to be damaging, and certainly any official measures which could be taken to discourage such behavior should be utilized and encouraged. And dvarim hanigetsim halev, nichnosim el halev, words which come from the heart and are meant sincerely are received also sincerely and have their effect.